It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. French police have released a photo of the suspect who is still at large from the Friday night attacks on Paris that killed at least 132. Suspect is identified as Salah Abdeslam, a 26-year-old man born in Brussels, Belgium. He is one of three brothers linked to the string of near-simultaneous attacks carried out by the Islamic State. Those Paris attacks dominated the G20 summit in Antalya, Turkey, where President Obama represented the U.S., VOA's Luis Ramirez reporting.
Leaders came to talk about trade, energy, and climate change, but it was the terrorist attacks in Paris and the need to do something about the conflict in Syria that topped the agenda.
We will redouble our efforts.
The U.S. leader said the United States stands in solidarity with the French and will help hunt down the perpetrators of the attacks in Paris and work to resolve the Syrian crisis.
As was true with the terrible attacks that took place in Ankara, the killing of innocent people based on a twisted ideology is an attack not just on France, not just on Turkey, but it's an attack on the civilized world.
At the summit's first working session, a moment of silence was observed for all victims of terrorism. Luis Ramirez, VOA News, Antalya, Turkey.
Meantime, French fighter jets have launched massive airstrikes against the Islamic State stronghold of Raqqa, Syria. French President Francois Hollande has called Friday's gun and suicide attacks an act of war. Egyptian security officials say police discovered the bodies of 15 African migrants found shot dead in Egypt's Sinai Peninsula near the country's border with Israel and Gaza. Another 8 migrants also found in the attack. This is VOA News. United States has transferred 5 Yemeni detainees being held at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, to the United Arab Emirates. The 5 low-level detainees had been held at the U.S. military prison for more than a decade. None had been charged with a crime, and all were captured in 2001 by Pakistani and Afghan forces and eventually turned over to the United States. The conflict in Yemen has made it impossible for the Obama administration to transfer detainees from there to their homeland, instead having to negotiate resettlement within other countries. President Obama has made closing the Guantanamo prison a priority, saying that militants use it as a recruiting tool and that it has harmed the image of the United States. A Ukrainian soldier was killed and 8 others wounded in attacks in the country's east as fighting between government forces and pro-Russia separatists intensified despite a ceasefire deal. Under the ceasefire, both sides are to have withdrawn most weapons from the front line as part of a 12-point plan. Ukraine and the West accusing Russia of supporting the rebels, Moscow denying that claim. Myanmar opposition leader Aung San Suu Kyi, whose National League for Democracy party swept to a resounding victory in November 8th parliamentary elections, has opened talks with long-standing military foes as she prepares for the next government. President Thein Sein, speaking Sunday, vowed full cooperation in transition to a new government and an attempt to ease domestic and international concerns that the military will once again ignore election results as it did a quarter century ago. Nicholas Farrelly, director of the Myanmar Research Center at Australian National University, spoke with VOA.
That's an election, of course, which looks as though it will deliver a great deal of power and influence to the president's political opponents. Every signal coming from him and from senior members of the armed forces suggests that they're prepared to concede that they have lost whatever mandate it is that they claimed in the past, and that mandate has now transferred to Aung San Suu Kyi's National League for Democracy.
Aung San Suu Kyi, who spent 15 years under house arrest for her pro-democracy activism, has in recent days raised eyebrows among the country's military leadership, insisting that she will appoint a proxy president with little power while governing from a position above the presidency. And the Philippine authorities are preparing for this week's Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Leaders Summit. They've completed security simulations and placed the entire country on full alert. Get more news at our website, voanews.com. I'm Steve Norman in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Monday, November 16th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Burundi's government says it is ready for dialogue with all Burundians in and outside the country.
Let me say that not only that dialogue is going to be based in the spirit of the Arusha Accord, but also, and most importantly, on the Constitution of the Republic of Burundi, which has set up a number of institutions in charge of dialogue.
Alain Yametwe is Burundi's foreign minister. A Liberian presidential candidate says President Obama's lifting of sanctions against Liberia is intended to move the country forward. DRC's first lady offers hope to local farmers, and South Sudan women say they want more representation in the country's upcoming transitional government.
It's very important that all the IO and the government and the other political party to observe the 25% within their representations, make sure that women are involved in all the activities.
Nyaton James Holt is a South Sudan women activist. Uganda's 2016 presidential contenders begin their second week of campaigning this week. We'll hear from former Prime Minister Mbabazi's campaign spokesman. And three Belgian brothers are linked to Friday's terrorist attacks in Paris. Those stories, plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Burundi's government says it is ready for dialogue with all Burundians in and outside the country. Foreign Minister Alain Yamitwe says the talks will not only be in line with UN Security Council Resolution 2248, but also the Arusha Agreement, as well as the Burundian Constitution. This follows calls last week by the United Nations and the African Union for an all-inclusive dialogue amongst Burundian stakeholders under the auspices of the East African Community, mediated by Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni. On the other hand, Foreign Minister Nyamitwe says there is no need for UN peacekeeping forces in Burundi because the country's crisis had not reached the level, like, say, the Central African Republic or Mali, to warrant the introduction of UN peacekeepers.
Let me say that not only that dialogue is going to be based in the spirit of the Arusha Accord, but also, and most importantly, on the Constitution of the Republic of Burundi, which has set up a number of institutions in charge of dialogue. Yes, it is correct to say that the dialogue that we have started in Burundi 2 days ago goes in line with those pronouncements made by the United Nations Security Council and also the African Union. But let us work rather in line more with the UN Security Council resolution, because it carries more weight than the communiques of the African Union. And this is not new, because that's exactly how the diplomatic framework is organized in the international arena.
If that is the case, Mr. Minister, it's one thing to say you agree to talk. What are you going to offer? Are you offering a new elections, or are you offering a government of national unity? What are you going to offer?
James, please. I'm talking about the agreement to talk. I'm talking about the readiness of the government to open up dialogue for all Burundians, whether they are inside and outside the country. It is up to the Burundians to know what topics need to come into discussions, not up to me, or not up to even the facilitator. Let's not go into speculations, which might not be confirmed when the dialogue starts.
Would your government welcome United Nations or African Union peacekeepers? For example, some people are suggesting MONUSCO in the Democratic Republic of Congo to come to Burundi.
For what?
Make sure the violence stops.
No, come on. We've been over the last 4 days. Could you tell me where you had a violence in Burundi? Could you just give me one instance?
To me that you don't welcome that.
No, me, but for what? Because for the UN to deploy a peacekeeping mission, there's a number of criteria which need to be considered. Burundi is not at the stage of Central African Republic. Burundi is not at the stage, let's say, of Mali a few years back. No, far away from it. You can come to Bujumbura and find out for yourself. Now, MONUSCO, for what I know, its mandate is within the territory of the Democratic Republic of Congo, period. Burundi is not a part of the DRC. However, the resolution talks about contingency planning. But contingency planning does not mean that there is a mission that is going to set feet in Burundi.
Alain Nyamitwe is Burundi's foreign minister. He was speaking with me from the Belgian capital, Brussels. The three major candidates in Uganda's 2016 presidential election entered the second week of campaigning this week as they continue to make their case to the Ugandan people. Incumbent President Yoweri Museveni of the ruling National Resistance Movement, who is seeking another term after nearly 30 years in power, told voters over the weekend that he will boost universal primary and secondary education if re-elected. He also said he will provide sanitary pads for girls, among other things, to keep girls in school. But Michael Mambike, spokesman for the Go Forward team, the alliance supporting the candidacy of former Prime Minister Amama Mbabazi, says Ugandans are yearning for change after 30 years of broken promises by Mr. Museveni, and they are turning to Mr. Mbabazi as the candidate who can deliver the change.
The people of Uganda are yearning for change. And you can see it in their faces. You can see it by the kind of reception and warmth that they give this candidate. The campaign is moving quite well. We are gaining momentum by the day. But what is also very interesting are the massive defections from the National Resistance Movement. Every day we receive over 500 leaders and members of the National Resistance Movement. They're coming in to join our candidates. The way we are gaining momentum is certainly sending shivers inside the ruling establishment.
President Museveni used one of his campaign speeches to talk about the declining poll numbers of the ruling National Resistance Movement, blaming it on the disunity within the movement. What do you make of that?
Of course, a regime that has been in power for 30 years cannot be growing in popularity. That regime is on a decline. The regime is suffering diminishing returns. And I think President Museveni himself can see it by the reception that he is getting from the population. It is true that because of so many broken promises, because of biting poverty in the countryside, because of the growing unemployment and failure to resolve it, the people are going to have lost confidence in the NRM, and they are turning up in large numbers to make a statement that we are tired of the regime, a 30-year regime.
In the same speech I mentioned, President Museveni touted the accomplishments of his government. Particularly, he mentioned creating about 2.5 million jobs. So the president is saying that his government has been doing something for the people of Uganda. Therefore, he should continue in power.
No, I think he just does not get it right. One of the biggest failures of the Museveni regime is failure to create and plan for employment. He cannot be a champion of employment because he himself has destroyed all those avenues which can create employment for young people, which can create employment for adults.
Michael, the criticism against your candidate, the Honorable Mbabazi, is that his critics say they don't know exactly what he stands for. Is he a clone of the National Resistance Movement?
That's a misconception. The right Honorable Mbabazi stands for peaceful change of government. Honorable Mbabazi has come out very clearly and said he stands for reforms in our agriculture sector, reforms in our public service sector, reforms in the education sector, reforms in the health sector, reforms in transport and infrastructure. It is a clear campaign. The people of Uganda are receiving it very well, and the people of Uganda are convinced that he is actually the candidate who can win them government.
Michael Mambike is the spokesman for the Go Forward team, the alliance supporting the candidacy of former Prime Minister Amama Mbabazi. He was speaking with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Today is Monday, the 16th day of November, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. Most people in eastern Congo would agree that land disputes are one of the root causes of the region's conflicts. Recently, there's been a trend for large landowners to let out more of their concessions to smallholder farmers to cultivate. Is this the solution to the land problem? Nick Long visited one of these concessions owned by President Joseph Kabila's wife to investigate.
Three times a week, a group of smallholder farmers works together on a community field in the village of Kiraliwe in eastern Congo's North Kivu province. Last week, the group was tilling the soil with hoes before planting potatoes. The team leader shouts, "Let's go," while group members tell one another to work harder. An organisation called FOPAC is teaching this group better farming techniques, like sowing improved seed in straight-line furrows, removing grass instead of burying it, and using manure as fertiliser. Mumbere Makuke works for FOPAC as a farming advisor. He tells VOA the surrounding hills are owned by First Lady Olive Lembe, wife of DRC President Joseph Kabila. Much of the land used to be cultivated, he says, but the person Olive Lembe bought the property from last year had turned it into pasture. Lembe is now encouraging smallholders to grow crops on some of her land, which she has renamed Hope Farm. Many local people have little access to land because much of it was bought by ranchers, often on dubious terms. Hope Farm charges standard rents, and these have risen steeply in recent years.
For example, pour un hectare ou dix parcelles, donc pendant quatre mois, vous allez payer $200.
Mumbere says the typical rent in this area for 1 hectare, 10,000 square meters, is $200 for a season of 4 months. Many people rent smaller fields of about 400 square meters for $10 a season. FOPAC tries to avoid conflict with ranchers whose cattle often graze farmers' crops. We decided to dig ditches around the field, says Mumbere, to stop cattle getting across. Farmers VOA spoke to here seemed happy with the new farming methods, but there is little manure available for their own fields, and improved potato seeds are $1,600 for the 2 tons needed for a hectare. Josephat Musanza, an agricultural researcher, says many farmers cannot afford to pay any rent, let alone buy tons of improved seeds.
Il y a aussi une autre forme qui se fait, par exemple, puisque je vis au niveau de Ntamugenga.
He says those farmers can have access to land on condition of giving a share of their harvest, often 20%, to the landowner or manager. But as improved farming methods take hold, landowners may not be content with a 20% share of what is likely to be a poor harvest. Unless the government introduces policies to help smallholder farmers, they will have less and less access to land in this area, except as landless labourers, as people with money outbid them. Nick Long for VOA News, Goma.
One of the candidates in Liberia's 2017 presidential election who had been affected by U.S. sanctions says since 2003 says he's thankful to President Barack Obama for lifting the sanctions. Businessman Benoni Ure, a former associate of former President Charles Taylor, said he's most grateful to President Obama, not for himself, but for other Liberians, some of whom have been sick but could not travel abroad to get treatment because of the sanctions. Ure was sanctioned by the United Nations in 2000 for his alleged role in arms procurement for Charles Taylor's rebels. He denies any role in arms procurement, saying the UN investigated the matter for 15 years and found no magnitude.
I want to thank President Obama for giving Liberia another chance. You know, it's not about Benoni and James Forte. They're Liberians. The Deputy Minister of Finance, Juanita New, she's been sick, suffering from cancer for almost 10 years, and she has been refused a visa to go to America. Hopefully, she will get one in a few days, and maybe her life can be saved. I hope some congressmen, some people in America listen to me. Forget about Ben and I. Look at all of those that died because they were on sanctions. Jenkins Dunbar, Maurice Cooper, all of these people died because they were on sanctions. But thank God, President Obama has lifted it.
So, Mr. Ure, you said that you believe you should not have been sanctioned in the first place. But when those sanctions were imposed in 2002, I think the allegations were that you were the one responsible for buying weapons for Charles Taylor.
James Rotty, the UN have investigated it for almost 15 years. And it's on a magnitude that James Rotty, why would Ben and I hear it? A peace-loving citizen of Liberia who has never really been involved in war. Why would I get involved in purchasing arms and ammunition? I made it clear, and for the record, I would like to say it again. I was giving an order from the finance minister. He said the president of Liberia had directed him to instruct me to transfer $620,000. I just wrote a letter to my controller, and I said, by orders of the president as communicated to me through the finance minister, you are hereby instructed to instruct our agents to transfer the money. Where did I go wrong, James Forty, for me to be liable?
The last time we talked, I asked you for the Truth and Reconciliation Commission recommendation. I think their recommendation was that you should be prosecuted for the commission of economic crimes.
If it can be proven that I committed economic crime, I should be prosecuted. But look, let me tell you what the case was. There was a guy whose name is Peters. I think John Peters. He doesn't exist because somebody from the commission admitted to me that he doesn't exist. These are some of the frauds within the commission report. He claims that I shipped 100 containers of rubber out of Liberia. The capacity of the little rubber factory I operated in Banga in 5 years could never ship 100 containers of rubber out. So, you know, that was far-fetched. These are some of the misinformation and propaganda that people continue to spread. But we believe that the American government has investigated it, and they have found no magnitude in it.
Businessman Benoni Ure is a candidate in Liberia's 2017 presidential election. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. Women rights activists in South Sudan say they want more women appointed as ministers in the country's upcoming transitional government of national unity than stipulated in the peace agreement. The agreement says 9 female ministers shall be appointed from both the government and the armed opposition. But activists say that's less than the current constitution provides for. Philipton Alain has more for VOA from Juba.
Nyanton, James Host, presented a paper on the role of women in peace building during a public lecture organized by the SAD Institute. She says women played a key role during the peace talks and must be actively involved in the peace deal. Host says the agreement specifies the number of women to be appointed to the national government, but says nothing about how many women should be appointed to state governments.
It's very important that all the IO and the government and the other political party to observe the 25% within their representations, make sure that women are involved in all the activities.
Who says military commanders are not the only ones who should be given prominent positions in the transitional government of national unity.
Women doesn't have to be at the front line to fight, but women are key stakeholders within the conflict. Women take different roles. Definitely, there are women that we can say that they're actually on the front line.
Women activist Margaret Matiang agrees. She says the transitional government will have 9 female ministers, including 4 to be nominated by the government and 3 by the SPLM-IO. She points out that that number is lower than the 25% female representation in all government institutions as provided for in 2011 transitional constitution.
When a South Sudanese woman see a woman in a position of decision-making, she always feel proud that she's represented, and she can easily bring her issues to, reach out to that person who is in that responsibility so that her views can be heard.
Matiang says the role of women will be particularly important for peace building in a post-conflict South Sudan.
When people started fighting, many women thought this is a war between, you know, the elephants. But the people who suffered most are who? Women and children. So peace is a public demand, especially for women and children.
Agulde Chut, another women rights activist attending the lecture, says women should not limit their scope to political participation. Chut says the peace agreement is an opportunity to address issues affecting women in villages. Chut says women groups must expand their outreach and fight cultural norms that prevent girls from going to school, such as early child marriages. For VOA News, I am Philipton Aleu in Juba.
Flags flew at half-staff and thousands of people gathered across France to pay homage to the victims of Friday's terrorist attacks in Paris. Lisa Bryan has more for VOA from Paris.
3 brothers are believed to be among the suspects linked to the string of near simultaneous attacks across Paris on Friday night. Authorities have identified one of them as Abdeslam Saleh, born in Brussels, Belgium. The so-called 8th attacker, he is on the loose. French police have issued his picture in hopes that someone will recognize him, but they caution he is dangerous and no one should intervene on their own. Another brother, Ibrahim Salah, blew himself up at the Bataclan Music Hall during an attack there that killed more than 80 people. Belgium authorities are detaining the third brother. Police in both France and Belgium have made several arrests and are also questioning family members and other people linked to the other suspected assailants. French news reports say three French suicide bombers have been identified. They also report that two cars believed to be used by the assailants have also been found, carrying Belgium license plates. More details about Friday's bloodbath have also emerged. Three teams of terrorists reportedly carried out the string of attacks around Paris. One group blew themselves up outside a soccer stadium, killing one person. The other two carried out attacks on several Paris night spots. France is marking 3 days of mourning for the victims, who include more than 350 wounded. Hundreds of people packed Notre Dame Cathedral for an evening mass. A huge crowd carrying candles also gathered Sunday night at the Place de la République, scene of massive peace demonstrations after January's Paris attacks.
That's viewers Lisa Bryant reporting from Paris. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Owoman reporting from Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with the rugby. Kenya edged Zimbabwe 21-17 to win the Rugby Africa Men's Sevens Championships in Johannesburg, South Africa on Sunday. Morocco outwitted Tunisia 19-12 to place third. They are followed by Namibia, Madagascar, Uganda, Nigeria, Botswana, Mauritius, Senegal and Zambia in that order. Consequently, Kenya joined South Africa in qualifying for the men's rugby contest at the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympics in Brazil. While Zimbabwe, Morocco and Tunisia get a last chance to qualify for the Olympics at a tournament next June. Turning to football, Uganda outclassed Togo 3-0 in the return leg of their second round Africa 2018 FIFA World Cup qualifier in Kampala on Sunday. Uganda prevailed on a 4-0 aggregate. Zambia beat Sudan 2-0 to progress on a 3-0 advantage. Guinea dismissed Namibia 2-0 to win on a 3-0 aggregate. The Democratic Republic of Congo and Burundi drew 2-2. The Congolese go ahead on a 5-4 advantage. Equatorial Guinea pipped Morocco 1-0. However, Morocco advanced on a 2-1 aggregate. Gabon pipped Mozambique 4-3 in a post-match penalty shootout after they tied 1-1 on aggregate. Early on Saturday, Algeria and Tanzania drew 2-2. Republic of Congo pipped Ethiopia 4-3. Botswana edged Mali 2-1 and Chad pipped Egypt 1-0. On Friday, Swaziland and Nigeria drew 0-0, as did Comoro Islands and Ghana. Madagascar and Senegal drew 2-2. Libya edged Rwanda 1-0. Tunisia pipped Mauritania 2-1. South Africa beat Angola 3-1. Kenya edged Cape Verde Islands 1-0. Cameroon outclassed Niger 3-0. And Ivory Coast pipped Liberia 1-0. In Egypt, hosts Rwanda is drawn with Gabon, Morocco, and Ivory Coast in Group A for the Orange African Nations Championships, the Confederation of African Football disclosed. According to the draws conducted in Cairo on Sunday, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Angola, Cameroon, and Ethiopia are in Group B. Group C consists of Tunisia, Nigeria, Niger, and Guinea. Group D features Zimbabwe, Mali, Uganda, and Zambia. The three-week contest starts on the 16th of January in Kigali. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Egyptian police say the bodies of 15 African migrants were found shot dead in Egypt's Sinai Peninsula near the country's border with Israel. That's it for this Monday, November 16th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford and reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing that you will make this week a very, very productive one.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, exceptional future leaders will gather for this year's World Bank's Youth Summit to tell the story of young people's role in the fight against climate change, join host Shaka Sali and his guests discussing how youth can inspire communities everywhere to take action. That's next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on VOA Africa.